todos ellos necesitan nuestro acompañamiento y nuestra total disposición desde el lugar que estemos. El camino de la emancipación nunca ha sido fácil y tampoco lo es hoy en día. Si bien como hermanos latinoamericanos hemos abrazado la causa de la paz, todavía siguen existiendo en nuestras tierras pretensiones colonialistas e imperialistas, aquí como en nuestro sur, en nuestro mar argentino, nuestras queridas Islas Malvinas. Y bregamos para que Reino Unido entienda y tome y acuerde lo establecido por las resoluciones de Naciones Unidas y entienda que el único camino por el que vamos a trabajar y a transitar es el de la paz, el diálogo y el respeto al derecho. Nuevamente, y finalizando, mis más sinceras felicitaciones a los organizadores y propulsores de esta conferencia, de este encuentro entre hermanos, para poder, desde el intercambio, desde el análisis y profundización de los legados de nuestros grandes patriotas, alimentar nuestra esperanza, nuestro compromiso y nuestra acción en la construcción de un mundo en equilibrio, de un mundo en paz, en armonía con la Madre Tierra, un mundo mejor que todos merecemos. Gracias, pueblo cubano. Argentina te abraza.
Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Augusto Cesar Sandino II just reminded you to tune in to the Global Local program every Monday night from more or less 6 to 9 p.m. and occasionally beyond, bringing you revolutionary news and views and analysis sometimes, but always bringing you the kick-ass music you won't hear anywhere else. Every Monday night, 6 to 9, with your DJ Augusto Cesar Sandino. Check it out.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. A show you've been waiting for? Well, perhaps not. In any case, we're going to be covering the public lack of safety committee, or safety as they call themselves, of the Santa Cruz City Council, and a few other things. So stay tuned and stay with me for the next 2 hours. I'll be your host. I'm Robert Norris. And the call-in number here is 427-3772, so keep that in mind, and who knows, maybe you'll decide to give a call and we can talk. Subject of the show is homeless civil rights, or recently actually the attacks on homeless civil rights, recent hysteria around needles and needle exchange, and breaking news. You bring me the news, and we'll break it together. Hopefully before we all get broken. from the album. My goodness, what's the name of this album? Which Side Are You On? By Annie DeFranco, and the name of that was Jay. And, you know, usually I read the lyrics because sometimes the music covers the lyrics, or the lyrics are sort of softly sliding by. Or maybe Annie's mumbling a little, who knows, however you want to describe it. But I think she was pretty clear in those lyrics, so I'm not going to today for that particular song. So welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, a two-hour show coming up, as mentioned before. Going to devote, I guess, a significant portion of it to, well, some of it's going to be catching up on interviews, as usual, that I haven't had a chance to catch up on. Beginning with last Saturday's Food Not Bombs, the attack on Food Not Bombs by postal officials and local police. That demanded that public space, normally open to the public, be abandoned and left on penalty of, it wasn't entirely clear, they said they cited the state trespass law, the federal official talked about federal trespass. There were a lot of threats of serious criminal charges being brought against people who were off to the side serving free food to others. With the group Food Not Bombs, and what was not just a charitable food distribution, but also essentially a political protest on the steps of a federal building. It was dispersed with under the claim, not that they were disrupting business, not in the claim that they were blocking people coming and going, but on the claim that they were, quote, trespassing, as though anything... Anytime you're on federal property, regardless of what you're doing, if the federal officials decide you're trespassing, they can order you to leave. And if you don't, then they can bring charges against you, or at least those were the threats that were made last Saturday. And my understanding is that Food Not Bombs is going to be back this Saturday at 4 o'clock on the steps of the main Santa Cruz post office. I should say on the sidewalk next to the steps. I don't think they're going to be going up to the top of the steps again at this particular point, although there was some discussion of that. But I heard sort of back and forth. I wasn't at the Food Not Bombs most recent meeting. In fact, I think they're having one tonight to come to some decisions. I myself, as I've mentioned in my own writing on this, though I am a former Food Not Bombs server and jailbird. I've been to jail with Food Not Bombs in both Santa Cruz and San Francisco. I'm not serving food this time. I'm just not terribly handy in the kitchen and not terribly interested in cooking. Eating, yes, I will definitely eat, but I'd rather be writing than cooking or interviewing than cooking, and that's sort of what I think my strength is and what I enjoy doing, so I go and do that instead. And that's what you heard if you listened to the Sunday show, which is a longer show from 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. You heard me going through interviews with people on the and the scene last Saturday at the Food Not Bombs meal, which was attacked by police and officials. They weren't physically attacked, but they were attacked with serious threats and demands and so forth. By officials who didn't want to really give complete information. Didn't want to say what federal charge that was supposedly people were violating. They didn't want to say who their superiors were. They didn't want to say who they got complaints from or what the specific complaints were. None of this information was available. And if you want, you can go back and hear this dialogue between the federal official and the, I think his name was... I don't remember his name, but I think I wrote it down. I may recall it. But between that federal official and the Food Not Bombs servers, who kept inquiring and trying to explain to him that they'd previously come to an understanding with the officials, that the police justification for the run, or they may be subject to the various kinds of attacks that homeless people, political tablers, musicians and performers can find confronting them on the sidewalks of Santa Cruz, because there's a whole variety. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hello, Uncle Robert.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hello, Uncle Robert.
Oh, can you hear me? I don't hear you. Maybe I'm...
Okay.
Try calling back, perhaps.
I'll call you back.
Wait
yeah,
a minute.
If I'm wrong here.
I mean, I think I can hear you now. I'm sorry. I do hear you. I had to boost something in the studio. I'm actually not sure why I... But in any case, go ahead, caller. I think we can hear you.
Hello, Uncle Robert?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. I can't think in American culture what is a more public place than the U.S. Post Office. Excuse me. The police have got to smarten up and get out of the way. And I think if there are true American patriots out there and they believe in the freedom and they believe what Putin and Obama is doing, they ought to show up and form a line of protection around Putin and Obama, not let the police disrupt this. The police are being stupid, stupid, stupid.
Well, you know, of course, I am inviting people, and I'm going to be there myself day after tomorrow, 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, just to document what's going
Saturday.
On. Be supportive of, you know, Food Not Bombs. I mean, I feel it's a right to assemble at a public building. I feel it's a right to assemble to present a very important political message that we need and don't have food, not bombs, you know, just generally in the country. With more and more bombs and less food, although... You know, candidly, it's more shelter than food that's an issue for the poor in Santa Cruz, but that's not generally true necessarily across the country. I think shelter is an issue everywhere across the country. Housing is an issue. Jobs are an issue. A decent standard of living is an issue. But certainly the right to protest in order to bring the attention of the community, the attention of the officials to all these issues is kind of primary.
I mean, the right to just act like a good citizen on the steps of the post office. My God, you know, the police can interrupt with that. I think people should show up on Mass Saturday and protect Food Not Bombs. The police are out of control, and we need to protect Food Not Bombs. Thank you, Robert.
Hey, thank you. And I agree, and I'll be there. I think that officials and police use a variety of strategies, or have in the past, against Food Not Bombs, and it may well be that it may be a very quiet afternoon this coming Saturday, because I don't know that Food Not Bombs is going to attempt to reclaim the right to be on the steps of the post office. I think there's mixed sentiment in the group. Some feel it's important to be able to serve free food to people, healthy vegan food, food that is to some extent reclaimed food that was going to be wasted and tossed, but has been turned into healthful, tasty food. And their meals are pretty good, is my understanding. I've even tasted them on occasion. I don't think I had the last meal there, but because I was too busy running around with my tape recorder. But the issue for some people in Food Not Bombs is, you know, we don't want to confront the police. We just want to serve food. And that, again, is certainly the right of a group to do. If they want to become a charitable food-serving organization that sort of is somewhat stripped of its political ovaries or balls, so to speak, because they're abandoning public space at the behest of the public officials, because the public officials are uncomfortable with them there, even though they have a perfect right to be there constitutionally. That is something that each individual and each organization must make a choice on. And I don't know that this Food Not Bombs has made a choice either way on that. I think they're trying to see if the police are going to go after them now for being on the sidewalk in front of the post office, which, as I said, that can be the basis for various attacks. Under city ordinances passed specifically to go after political activists, homeless people, spare changers, street people, that aren't doing anything wrong, but that the merchants feel are a drag on their tourist business, or just don't want around. They like to call it problematic street behavior. They've got lots of terms for it. Quality of life. They've got a variety of broken windows type stuff. But in fact, it's really increasing privatization and gentrification of public spaces. We've got another caller. Yo, caller, you're on free radio.
Is Robert North there?
I believe he is. Let me check the studio. Oh, Robert! Yes, he's here. Go ahead.
I've got a few minutes on needle exchange, but only a few because I'm waiting to start a desal meeting.
Oh, okay. We're, of course, talking with Steve Plaich, a former city council candidate and future city council candidate. One might say perennial city council candidate. And you yourself have spent how many years doing needle exchange?
About five, including writing grants for SCAP when they had the needle exchange, and then, of course, since 2009 when the street outreach supporters, or what is known now as the Santa Cruz Syringe Access, got started.
Well, you sat through most, if not all, of the Tuesday Public Safety Committee meeting and some of the earlier one in December, which, you know, had a lot of stuff, a lot of concerns by the community about needles that had been discarded and not been properly picked up and dealt with. When I talked to you privately, you suggested that two things. You suggested, first, that this was not as large a problem as it was being claimed to be by those who were upset about it. Not that it isn't a problem, not that it isn't important.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, you said that there was, though there was, and this is sort of showed me that you're willing to present what's called reluctant testimony, even though needle exchange was funding was, I guess, completely cut and became a volunteer organization in 2009. Is that correct?
That is correct, as a matter of fact, because it was under the auspices of SCAP, and when they get their harm reduction program funds cut, then some people in town, including myself, took it over and started what has become, since November 2009, the functional needle exchange in Santa Cruz.
But even though, this is what I was impressed with when I talked to you about this, even though you said the funding was cut from, what, $100,000 back to zero, something like that? Maybe not.
Yeah,
that.
Well, I had personally, when I wrote grants for SCAP, gotten about $75,000 the first year that I wrote. And so that was the grant funding that we had, plus whatever funding was coming from the state of California. So it was a relatively large sum.
But you pointed out, and I think it, trying to be fair, you weren't trying to amplify the problem or, you know, be spare changing for the needle exchange. You said that you still felt that there was significant services going out almost at the level of 2009 in spite of that cutback. Is that accurate?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, our program was at exactly the same level, with the exception maybe of a satellite exchange that SCAP had run out in Watsonville. But in terms of the number of needles that we're exchanging, the services that we're providing, in fact, we had provided more services than SCAP because we had provided some overdose counseling in terms of there's an overdose drug, naloxone, that you can take. People would come to the exchange sites and we would give them a training, and those overdose medications would be registered. And so we were also interested at the time of this last concern by the community for needle litter, beginning to go into offering perhaps some scholarships for rehabilitation for any intravenous drug users in town who were interested in going a different way. So we were starting to diversify our services, even with a very limited budget.
Yeah, you essentially were volunteers, no longer funded, right? Really?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all volunteer-driven, and it's all private grant funding. And so I thought the exchange had done a really marvelous job. And, you know, what gets lost now, as Robert, in my view, is that this hurts the people who are wanting the needle exchange, and they need the needle exchange so that they can safely exchange their contaminated needles for clean ones. This is going to make it much more difficult for people who are intravenous drug users to be able to safely and conveniently dispose of the needle.
Sorry, Steve, what exactly is going to make it more difficult? Be more specific.
There's going to be, the needle exchange as we know it now, because of the latest concerns by the community, which I do accurately characterize my view of that as a bit more extreme than really the problem was. But nevertheless, the needle exchange in the form that we have had it, which is all volunteer-driven at sites in Barson and Bixby and in Emmeline, that is going to change. There still will be a needle exchange in Santa Cruz, but because of the recent hearings before the City Council and the Public Safety Committee, there is going to be a new structure needle exchange. That needle exchange is going to be overseen by County Health Services. There is going to be some police oversight. There's going to be some City Council oversight. oversight. And, of course, the people who are involved in the exchange now will be involved in structuring that new program, but it'll be a completely different animal than it has been in the past.
Well, what about this? You know, I've noticed headlines in the Sentinel for the last 2 days. They talked about, I guess, needle exchange regulation. I thought it was more like needle exchange restriction because they've eliminated one of the two sites through threats on the lower ocean area where there had been needle exchange for 20 years. What's your reaction to that?
We had needle exchange at Barth and Bixby for some considerable period of time. What particularly frustrated me the other night when they did have the hearings before the Public Safety Committee meeting, a fellow came in who represented himself as being one of the neighbors of Lower Ocean. NOLO is their neighborhood group down there, saying that he was shocked that they were having needle exchange down there. And he was saying this is probably, you know, given rise to crime. And he says that every time their van pulls out from down there, although they didn't know anything about the exchange, he's assuming that every time the van pulls up following an exchange that people hang around or just looking for cars to break into. And this is a completely misrepresentation. When I ran for city council 2 years ago, NOLO had a walkthrough in their neighborhood to show people, you know, what the changes they had been able to make through neighborhood, you know, commitment and neighborhood efforts. And Eric Larson, Robert Moen, and J.D. Sotelo, who you may know are the leaders of that group, were walking along, and I was talking to Eric Larson. I said, Eric, you know, we've been doing needle exchange down here at Barson and Bixby for some time. I said, oh, I know that. He says, why don't you at the next station of our tour, you know, stop and tell people a little bit about it. We had a wonderful, in my view, relationship with those neighbors down there. That's the first point. Second point is when people come to exchange their needles at any of our exchange sites, they very rarely to never hang around. They exchange their points, and then they go away. They don't stay there. There is no drugs being sold at any of the exchange sites that I have ever seen, and there are no crowds of people hanging around waiting to either victimize the neighborhood or score drugs. And that's simply not the case.
Well, what I noticed, and again, I didn't yet put in a Public Records Act request to the police department, but there were no stats presented by either the neighbors, by Annalisa Cube, who's the Take Back Santa Cruz leader, who seems to some extent to be leading this effort of restricting needle exchange and, if not shutting it down, certainly clamping down on it.
Well, it's certainly going to be restructured, no question about it.
There was no evidence that there was increased crime in those areas. There did seem to be a perception from the testimony of several dozen individuals in the last two hearings of increased crime, but there were no stats presented, and I was a little curious about that.
And that's the interesting part of it, that they testified to increased crime in their neighborhoods, but never gave any testimony that linked that crime to anything having to do with needle exchange, but people kind of made that logically for one reason or another. I mean, the reason that the concerns of the citizens, and I think that they're well taken, are outsized by a factor of, you know, a large factor, is that they have been able to gather up in their beach clean, in the beach cleanups, the clean team in Take Back Santa Cruz, you know, TJ said they found 200 needles, something like that. We exchange 20,000 needles a month. You know, that's like saying if you find, you know, three or four used condoms in the park, they should shut down the Santa Cruz AIDS project. It just is completely disproportionate to the problem. My concern was, and remains, and I voice this to you, that when they initially had the Zach the Griner video that went viral, and then they had the walk down to city council, the Take Back and the Santa Cruz neighbors and the people in the clean team, when they expressed their concerns about needle litter, that was the time that our collective leadership and needle exchange should have gone in and said, what can we do to help to address this perceived problem? If they had gotten with them right then and said, you know, are you concerned about a one-to-one exchange? Come out here and we'll show you that it is a one-to-one exchange. If you're concerned about needle litter in various places, let's see what we can do together to address that problem. But unfortunately, the collective leadership of the needle exchange did not do that. And so what you saw Tuesday night was several members of the exchange getting up and being, you know, either looking unprofessional or defensive, but worse than that, they gave the impression that the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing. And that just is inexcusable, and that really is what's led now to what we become a complete restructuring of the needle exchange. It won't go away, but it'll be in a form that I think, number one, is not serving the intravenous drug users well. Number two, it will not do anything to decrease needle litter in the city. Number three, the city of Santa Cruz will be spending money on this they needn't spend because we had a functioning program. Number four, the police are going to be involved, and they know nothing about needle exchange. They have no business being involved in that other than, you know, making safe the neighborhoods. And number five, the county health service is going to have to get involved even to the more extent than they were now and spend money that they need to spend. So it really is creating a tremendous problem, but I would say that most, that hurts the most is the people who get the services. You know, you and I know as homeless advocates that the last thing people think about when they think about homeless services is actual homeless people.
Yeah, I hear you there. I also wanted to, again, bring back the point that I don't even know that there has been an increase in crime in the communities you mention compared with some years ago. I mean, there may have been. I mean, there certainly, that's the perception of a number of people. They're outraged about criminal behavior that happens there. But I'm wondering, has it increased at all? Maybe they would say, well, it doesn't matter because needle exchange has been going on for 20 years, and we blame needle exchange, and we blame drug use, intravenous drug users, homeless camps, you know, the celestial stars, whatever. We blame. And other people want to see some changes. And because obviously the city is not taking the actions it needs to. Let's put it this way. Whatever the problem is, you and I know that when a problem is brought to city council, whether it's, you know, if it's not in the agenda of the city council staff, it doesn't go anywhere. I mean, that's been my perception over the last 20 years, and probably I would suggest you've also said that's the case with something like DSAL, where you get a huge majority voting for, you know, don't do anything without another vote, which really means fuck this program, let's dump it.
Well, I think your point is a good one, and I think that if people are really, really interested in the relationship between needle exchange and increased crime in a neighborhood, they should talk to the people at NOLO, where we've been doing that Barson and Bixby exchange for a number of years, and ask that group, who I'm sure tracks their neighborhood crime statistics, if there's been any increase in crime during that period. A very simple thing to find out. And Robert, I have to go. I have a meeting starting, but thanks again.
Yeah, do call back about, you know, that DSAL. That's something that also interests your audience. Interesting enough, the DSAL was, there are some people, of course, who are hysterical about the needle situation, but who are also, I think, on board with stopping this huge DSAL boondoggle.
Interesting dichotomy. Okay, talk to you later.
All right. That was Steve Plaich, and you can reach him if you want to debate with him, talk to him, get homeless legal assistance of different kinds, and I'm often a critic of Steve's, but not at this particular moment in the show. You can call him at 466-6078. Again, area code 831-466-6078. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, and you can also catch the stream of Free Radio by going to freakradio.org and clicking on the little red dot on top of the transmitter in the display that you'll find once you get to freakradio.org. Hopefully you'll consider donating something, because we are, again, struggling here, as I understand it. A little note says, panhandle a lot, and so I should be panhandling a little at least. That's not the actual wording, but that's what the implication of the note is, posted on one of these devices here in the studio. We operate entirely on the basis of contributions, and also our members' fees and donations. We help to pay for the rent here, and the rent is something we can't really afford, but we're still hanging on by our fingernails. So go to freakradio.org if you want to be a member of Food Not Bombs, in the sense that you want to have a program here, which means kicking down some money, $30 every month. I think it's gone up, $35 maybe. I'm quite sure what the exact amount is right now. You can, and you can have a show. You can babble on the air like I do. You know, you can talk out to the community. You can bring in guests. Your only responsibility is to essentially help maintain the space and the equipment. And you do that. We do that partially through money and partially that through outreach. So, again, freakradio.org is the website to go to if you'd like to become involved in this or learn more about it or to see our schedule. There's also some shows archived there. My shows are archived on a separate website, huffsantacruz.org, HUFFSantaCruz.org. Huff stands for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And that's a group that meets every week, and people are invited to come. We had a meeting yesterday every Wednesday at 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. We get together, talk about homeless issues, sometimes even try to do something about them. And you can join this group, learn more about it, get on the Huff email list by going to our website, which is not the Freak Radio website, but it's the HuffSantaCruz.org website, which is also where these shows are archived for actually the last 8 years. And so there's a, you know, if you really get bored with life, you can sit down and spend the rest of your days listening to my old radio shows. Think of that. Let's take a musical break. I'll be back. Again, the call-in number here is 427-3772. 427-3772. Another one from Which Side Are You On, If You're Not, by Annie DeFranco. So, let's go now to the so-called Public Safety Committee meeting of the City Council. And I'm going to play a little bit of the beginning of it, and I think what I'm going to do then is skip to interviews I did around the periphery. And what I want to do at some point is actually play the entire hearing. Primarily, even though it has a lot of propaganda that I don't agree with, it should have been available to the community, and it is not. And you'll hear me talking about this at the beginning of the tape. The chair, David Choresis, has refused to ask his staff member there, Scott Collins, I think his name is, to audio the thing, even though the audio equipment is sitting right there, and that even though there is a huge crowd, probably larger than ordinary city council meetings. And it just shows the disrespect that the city council has. You might say, well, if you think these clowns are coming in with their hysteria about needle exchange and attacking homeless people, why do you want that amplified and brought out to the community? And I'd say because these are members of the public, and they have a right to be heard, and we have a right to know what's being said. And I don't like the idea of the city council managing the public for us. And that's exactly, I think, what goes on when we don't get access to these kinds of discussions, even though Annalisa Cube is definitely not my favorite person, and she was the person with the most concrete proposals, the woman given the most time at this hearing. She is a community organizer who's operating to try to raise issues she considers important, and I I'm doing the same thing, probably far less effectively than she is in terms of the numbers of people that I can muster. Certainly, no question about that. And individuals who do this should not be sidelined. These are people who are really the lifeblood of our community, however much I may disagree with them on most issues even. That I frankly have a lot more respect for activists who stand up and spend their own time and energy and money on issues than I do for city council politicians who essentially play second fiddle to the staff, city attorney, the institutional bureaucrats who have huge salaries, relatively speaking. They're entrenched for decades. They have their own agenda, and unfortunately they make it our agenda, whether we like it or not. So, let's hear a bit of the Public Safety Committee meeting. I think I will probably play more of it on Sunday when I have a morning show. I'm also hoping to have Keith McHenry, of co-founder of Food Not Bombs, on the air to talk about his impressions of what's going on elsewhere in the country around the crackdowns on food servers and political activists, Occupy, the remains of Occupy, new movements to try to restore the right to be in public spaces, reorient national priorities and local priorities, address the class war that the 99% suffers, or maybe the 70%, or the 80%. Anyway, let's hear some of this. I may play these the entire Public Safety Committee meeting in a sort of a separate broadcast and put it on as a possible audio file to be played here in the studio. Anyway, let's hear a little of what happened on Tuesday night.
Well, I'm out here with the notes.
The meeting is going to begin. I'm going to start the tape, and it is January 29th, 2013. I'm doing what the Public Safety Committee refuses to do, which is to record its own meeting for later reference and broadcast.
And it should be said that I actually spoke directly to Cynthia Matthews, who's on the committee, and then David Chiracis, the chair, and to Scott Collins, the staff member who has the power to record. All of them declined to do so. I got Cynthia Matthews sort of looked at me in a condescending manner and said, well, you can record it if you want, Robert. David Chiracis looked at me in an earnest way and said, well, we'll have to think about that for the future. And Scott Collins said, well, I haven't been directed to do it. And he also indicated that it might have taken a little preparation time, but that he did have the recording material there to do it. So it was, you know, I guess as a person who has a lot of interest in history and making sure people are accurately quoted and finding out what really happened based on the real words of the people involved and who abhors secrecy on these issues, I think this is particularly important to me. But it also tends to show what the city council is really all about. And here you hear the council coming to order, I should say the subcommittee, the committee of the city, of the public safety coming together.
Councilmember David Johnson, present. Councilmember Pamela Costa. Councilmember Cynthia Matthews.
Now, this is the first meeting we've had with two new committee members. So the approval of the minutes for December 17, 2012 will remain as a draft because we can't vote on them. But I can assure you that they are accurate as presented. So.
And it should be said that the minutes of the meeting are all we have of that turbulent 3.5-hour meeting. That and a few video clips. I did a little audio recording, but my equipment went bad on me there. Luckily, I think this time it didn't, and I have a complete recording. But all we have are these notes because of the refusal of the chair and the committee to keep a record of what went down.
We won't be voting on tonight. And before we get to the next item on the agenda, I'd like to let you know that there are some people from other agencies here tonight participating in the meeting and would be available for questions that might come up as the meeting proceeds. First of all, Bob Kennedy from the Health Services Administration for the county is here. Ira LaBelle, the acting medical director from the county, is here. Santa Cruz City Council member Michael Posner is here. Vice Mayor Lynn Robinson and Mayor Hillary Bryan are also here this evening. County Supervisor Neil Coonerty, who our office has been working with regularly, is not here tonight, but he has been in contact and is aware of the issues that we've been working on. I'd also like to let you know that Emily Auger from the Needle Exchange is here as well, and she'll be available to answer any questions that might come up as the meeting proceeds. Also, Santa Cruz City Police Chief Kevin Vogel is here, as well as Deputy Chief Clark and Martinez.
So, hail, hail, the gang's all here. I don't think a lot of these people spoke, none of these people, with the exception of a few of the Needle Exchange folks, spoke at the public comment period. They may have spoken later, and I was in and out of the room. But they were there in all their shining brass and their glowing and sometimes glowering finery. But, you know, they are simply the highly paid stick figures in the city. I'd say the police chief, the city attorney, who I don't think was there. Danette Shoemaker, I think, was there. She's the head of Parks and Rec, single-handedly declaring, well, certainly one of the main forces in and the actual activating person in creating curfews at the library and at the city hall and at the police department that were initiated in 2010 and now continue as permanent, ongoing kind of martial law-type curfews. You know, namely, be in an area, even if you're completely innocent, that's illegal. You can be cited, arrested, forcibly detained if you're there. Northern Ireland, here we come.
So thank you. So let's move on to the agenda, to the next item, number 3, the election of the Public Safety Committee Chair. Any nominations?
I'd like to nominate Steve Tarver.
Okay, so with that nomination, the seats will remain as they are. Nobody has to move tonight. And we'll vote on that. All those in favor?
Aye.
It's unanimous. So we'll continue. So I think
The old regime continues. David Teresis remains the chair of this group. An amiable fellow. Apparently, with, again, a hidden agenda that essentially involves no transparency whatsoever to the community. Another issue that came up, and you can find somewhat more discussion about online at Santa Cruz Indie Media, where I post my regular broadsides, Bathrop Spears broadsides. The name of the show isn't the only place I do my broadsides. Has an article on the... I did an update on what happened on this at this Public Safety Committee meeting, and also what I learned, well, what we all learned, depending on assuming it's accurate, because I haven't gone to the original sources, which I should do, is from the Santa Cruz Urinal, or Sentinel, as it calls itself. The Sentinel reported that there's been a shutdown, as Steve Plaich mentioned earlier in the show, of one of the two Needle Exchange sites. And this was done in secret, behind closed doors, by the Santa Cruz City Council in closed session. Initially, it was said that it was done unanimously, which really outraged me, because I had had a conversation with Micah Posner earlier, and he had mentioned absolutely nothing about any of this. And I phoned him today to ask if he favors the shutting down of Needle Exchange. And, you know, so that he won't hide behind the closed session votes are confidential or secret, which I don't think is actually the case. I think, you know, that the litigation discussions, maybe they called this litigation because there was potential litigation against the Bay Scott owner of the property where Needle Exchange has for 20 years done its Needle Exchange, I guess twice a week or some such things. In any case, we didn't learn about this. Nobody at the Public Safety Committee meeting mentioned it, though the entire council knew about it, and it was kept secret from the public. It would have impacted, I'm sure, the discussion. But again, an example of the contempt in which the city council holds the public. They have no interest in having any real dialogue, any informed discussion with the community. They want to proceed on their own and then make the token efforts necessary to make sure that they don't get sued under the Public Meetings Act, the Brown Act. That is my cynical conclusion.
What you're all here for tonight is item number 4, and this is a follow-up from the December 17, 2012 meeting, where we had some tremendous voices heard from the public regarding these issues that we're facing our town in regards to public safety. In light of Dylan's video that was shown at Calais Beach and the needles that were shown out there, and I want to thank everyone who attended that last meeting, those of you that are here again for this meeting, to hear some of the recommendations that now staff has looked at, and all of us here in front of you now have worked on over the past month and a half during the break to address. I'd like to turn it over to Scott Collins to go over the staff report as well as the presentation.
Thank you, Councilor David Trostis. My name is Scott Collins. I'm assistant to the city manager, and I'm really here just to kind of provide a broad overview of the report that staff has presented to this committee.
And this report is also online for those who want to look at it, and was, as I understand it, just simply rubber-stamped with no changes whatsoever and forwarded to the City Council for another vote, which will be not next Tuesday, although that would be 2 weeks from the last City Council meeting, but the Tuesday after, unless they have a special session, because City Council meetings, as I understand it, happen every second and fourth Tuesday of the month, and next week, next Tuesday, is the first Tuesday of February.
And also talk about our action plan, or at least recommend action plan to address some of the issues that were raised at the December 17th meeting. Chair Trostis mentioned, we had over 100 individuals in the community come out and express their concerns with some of the public safety issues that have arisen, particularly in regards to illegally discarded needles and other things like that, which have raised the specter that something needs to change.
And a thought that occurs to me, and I'm afraid I am going to be breaking into this discussion frequently, is that there were no stats whatsoever on individuals who were injured by discarded needles in the last 2 or 3 years, or 5 or 10 years, or 20 years when the needle exchange program was going on. I don't know how long it's gone on for. I think it's only been official since 2004 or something, but it may have been done unofficially for a much longer period of time. But I don't recall, frankly, personally, any examples of people who suffered from injuries from needles, that they actually fell over, slipped on, and so forth. So all the commotion about the discarded needles, while, who wants, discarded needles with possible hepatitis C and AIDS-tainted blood on them, certainly not, is really a serious issue, sure. It doesn't rise to the level of hysteria that has been created by this, which is being used as a sort of an attempt to increase, to push the police agenda. The police have always been, as I understand it, particularly Deputy Chief Steve Clark, hostile to the needle exchange program, the harm reduction program, for that matter, marijuana use, any kind of non-alcoholic drug use, maybe even alcoholic drug use. And it's not that abuse of drugs is good. It obviously isn't. It's not even that use of drugs is a particularly good thing. I'm not a big drug user myself, although I'm big on sugar and coffee, for sure. It's rather that the business of the community is not to be led around by the nose or steered through the police department's right-wing agenda, or for that matter, by the Santa Cruz neighbors, or the downtown neighbors, or Take Back Santa Cruz. And you might say, well, wouldn't you like to steer them by the nose with Huff members? And I'd say, yeah, probably, sure, in the sense that I'd like people to agree that people are entitled to basic human rights, like the right to sleep legally, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. But I don't think that, Huff is not in any way related to a group that is charged with the neutral oversight of safety and peace in the community, which is the police department, which I think is probably an impossibility to begin with, given the nature of the police department and the class nature of the community. But even if it were, or even if one were to accept the fantasies that are put forward as realities, that, somehow the police are your friends and they're here to help everybody and so forth, and they're very neutral and they're impartial and they're well-controlled and they're well-trained, all that stuff. Their political agenda is not one that should run the city. And unfortunately, it is a disproportionate impact on this town and other towns to the extent of destroying police oversight bodies, such as the Citizens Police Review Board, to the extent of politically running out of office people like John Malkin, who are on the police review board, to the extent of illegal surveillance of political groups like the DIY last night in 2006, and then covering up their surveillance by simply rubber stamping it and getting the entire city council, city hall, city structure to agree, getting the city manager to say, oh, it's okay to have Kevin Vogel, who at that time was not police chief but was a lieutenant, I think, perhaps, or a captain, maybe a deputy chief, have him investigate himself and declare he did okay, because he was the one that authorized that particular illegal political surveillance or improper political surveillance of the DIY last night. And these vendettas that the police pursue continue year after year. They continue to threaten people who walk in a peaceful parade at New Year's Eve. They're now pushing for triple fine zones, not just at Halloween, New Year's, 4th of July, but all year round in certain areas, supposedly to increase public safety. What it does is it increases police power and fear of the police, because who wants a triple fine for opening a can of beer at the wrong place in the wrong time, as though that were some sort of a major crime? Certainly not a poor person who can barely afford to buy a beer. So, let's hear more from the Public Safety Committee and less from me, or, for the moment, less from me.
We definitely heard that. The committee directed staff to do a couple of things at the December 17th meeting. One is to explore the creation of a citizen task force, particularly looking at the beach areas, assessing the oversight of the local needle exchange program, as well as local pharmacies that provide needles in Santa Cruz, and report back on efforts to fully staff the police department.
So again, stopping one of these recommendations is to form a citizen advisory group, and yet we learn the next day that a needle exchange at one of the two sites has been shut down. Hasn't been an advisory group formed to consider what should be done. The city attorney and the city council in secret voted to do it under threat of a cease and desist order by the city attorney. So you're getting lied to by these city council bodies that are attempting to pretend that they're involving the public when, of course, they're simply dictating to the public the agenda that is being fed to them by a conservative majority on the city council through the police department and other right-wing groups.
Placing additional sanitation resources like trash cans in public restrooms in the community.
And that's a good idea. That's a recommendation of a good idea, public restrooms. But if you look at the report, it's very vague about that. That's the one of the few things I agree with in this report, is to have some actual 24-hour bathrooms open. Wouldn't that be what a concept in a modern city such as Santa Cruz? You know, you would think that would be obvious because you have these complaints about feces, you know, around and places smelling like piss. But that's not likely to go anywhere, or at least not go anywhere very fast. It could be done immediately, and they could put in porta-potties tomorrow if they wanted. Ed Fry did in 2010 at Peace Camp 2010 for 3 months at his own expense. And it happens on construction sites all the time. So it's there's no will to do that. There's a will to pretend it's being done. In the meantime, the presence of feces and urine can be used to further denounce and demonize poor and homeless people around and use them as a scapegoat to increase police power. So we need more police officers. We need more first alarm security guards to go after these folks. And that, of course, is another one of the recommendations you just heard mentioned by Scott Collins, that there be an increase in policing, in full-paid police officers, as though there was massive assaults happening of an increased nature. Again, no stats on this. And I don't know if there have been an increase in assaults. And maybe somebody listening to the show can call in and correct me and say, well, Robert, you haven't been, you know, you're not on the ball. The latest stats are there's a 50% increase in assaults for the last 2 years. I'm not aware that's the case. I didn't hear that at any of these meetings. I haven't read that in the Sentinel. That doesn't mean it wouldn't necessarily be true. The Sentinel likes to maintain it's a wonderful tourist town. Everything's safe and wonderful here except for those dirty, grubby homeless people and those nasty political activists. But call in. Give me some information. All ye police officers, call in and tell me what the stats are, if there have been new stats on this. And welcome Public Records Act request help on finding out more about these issues, getting really solid information against versus having to try to rely on what the Sentinel tells us day to day. Again, back to Scott Collins. I'll try to make sure that we get him, let him talk for at least 10 seconds this time.
And finally, develop a coalition with other agencies in the county to address some of the underlying issues that face this community. So tonight I'll talk briefly about these topics up here. So this is moving on so we can get to public comment and questions as soon as possible. So after the meeting, actually in the run-up to the meeting, we had done some things at the city to address the immediate concerns. The police chief has instituted additional patrols, both of his police staff and as well as personal armed security guard in the beach area. And that led to over 55 issuances of citation, over 13 arrests, and one individual was arrested with a stolen bike, felony charge, and that bike was returned to its rightful owner. So really good about that. And the personal armed security guard patrols are actually going out onto the beach, all the way out to the Cal Cave location, and it's our belief is helping to deter illegal activity on the beach. Parks and Recreation is working on getting lighting at Cal Beach and the wharf to, again, provide better lighting, but also help deter illegal activity that's taking place in those areas. The city is working on some cleanups. This is in addition to the overwhelming response we've seen from the community and taking it upon themselves to do cleanups. So the city has worked with some private contractors to do cleanup along the rail line, as the RTC is currently unavailable to do that at this time. The city and county and the Eagle Exchange have met several times to really get at what we can do from an oversight perspective and work together to create a meaningful program that both provides that public health outcome that they seek, but also mitigates the negative impacts to our community. The city has also worked with the Homeless Services Center and some other agencies to provide bus fares to individuals who are in need of getting home to a place where they can be taken care of or receive family care or health care. And this is a voluntary based program, and it's helped over 60 individuals return to their place of origin. And again, totally voluntary basis. And it's a really cost-effective way of addressing some issues. And then finally, this has been an issue that's come up to this committee before. We'll go forward to City Council soon. It's the safety enhancement zone and disorderly conduct policies. This has been discussed before, but ultimately what it will do in the safety enhancement zones is create triple fine violations for public safety violations in our parks, beaches, riverways, and open space. And you know, if you're drunk in public or if you're doing other things that are violating our code, you will receive a triple fine. In addition to that, we give the police and park rangers the ability to remove an individual from a park for 24 hours if they violate the municipal code. And we believe this will help create a more safe environment both for public safety officials, but also for the community as they enjoy our public locations.
So I do want to comment on a few of these things. 55 citations and 13 arrests and one stolen bike. What were the citations for? What were the arrests for? Were there any of them for any real crimes like robbery? Apparently a bike got stolen, so at least one of them was for that, perhaps. Assault? Are we talking about open container, being in a park after dark, sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, anywhere in the city where it's illegal? That is, say, everywhere in the city which is where it is illegal. In a city which has shelter for less than 5 to 10% of the homeless in the winter. First alarm security, thugs in uniform going out onto the beaches, not doing anything. I mean, it would be nice if they're actually cleaning up the debris that citizens are going out there cleaning up instead of walking around, you know, as authoritarian figures to supposedly deter people from even thinking about falling asleep after 11 or being there after dark or some whatever the latest criminalization focus is. Again, deter illegal activity is the phrase used. Now, that means intimidate poor people to me. It doesn't, and, you know, I suppose it could have something to do with, you know, maybe it'll keep teenagers and drunken parties off the beach more as though that were an important issue, which, you know, I'm not aware that it is. Although, you know, alcohol abuse is probably the worst abuse, probably far more widespread than meth abuse. They helped 16 individuals in Homeward Bound. Well, that's nice for 16 individuals. At a cost of what? That's where they give you a ticket and you get to go somewhere else with no coercion. Well, that's good. But again, and you know, any facilities where they're actually helping someone is fine, but the implication that all we need to do is send everybody somewhere else is not a healthy picture or a fair or true picture to present, because everywhere is facing the same problems because we have the same profiteering, the same bad bombs, not food priorities all over the country. And you might even say all over the world, although where I'm talking about the United States. Safety enhancement zones, what that really means is, as he said, triple fine zones, which and in cars, beaches, open spaces. So this is a way of seriously coming down on people who are poor or even middle income who violate one of the absurd city codes, of which there are dozens, created specifically to give the police more power and to empower merchants to move away poor people from the downtown area and to get rid of political activists, I've also experienced. The 24-hour stay away from parks is something that has been fought in other cities. As I understand it, and I could be wrong here, they're talking about a cop giving you a citation and making you stay away from the park for 24 hours without there even being a conviction or a trial. And I'm not sure that that's the case, but even if it's after a conviction of, I don't know, being in the park after dark, forcing someone to abandon the right to use public parks for 24 hours, particularly serious for people who are poor, because parks are some of the few public spaces that at least during the day they are theoretically allowed to use. I say theoretically because it's been the practice often in the past for rangers to still harass and give tickets to people who are in the park if they choose to target them for sleeping and so forth. Though I must admit, I've seen people sleeping on the grass at City Hall recently. It's nice to see them at least catching a few winks during the late hours of the morning before they're driven away. It's illegal to be there, not just to sleep there, but to even stand up and read the agenda, which is posted at City Hall, the only place in the city where it's posted publicly for 24 hours a day that I'm aware of, unless you talk about being online if you happen to have a computer. So those are my comments on that, and we'll hear a little bit more, and then I'm going to turn to some other interviews. And again, I would like to hear your thoughts. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. My name is Robert Norse, and we are listening to the Public Safety Committee meeting, mostly me talking about the Public Safety Committee meeting, of Tuesday night before last, at City Hall. And for those who want to hear an uninterrupted version of that, I am going to try to play that at another time. And in fact, I may do that, give myself a break and go out and get an order of pancakes or something on Sunday. The trouble is other things tend to overtake, and I find that they are worth bringing up, and I think more timely than the latest city council crowd control approach, where it's trying to control the right-wing crowd in this case.
Moving on to hyperthermic needles, this again was discussed before the December meeting in 2012, but we're under a new regulatory environment as it relates to hyperthermic needles. Senate Bill 41, which was instituted in January 2012, permits pharmacies to provide up to 30 hyperthermic needles to individuals over the age of 18 without a prescription. That's not to say that all pharmacies provide 30, but they have the ability to do so. So we know more needles are out there. And also, we've been working really closely, and we'll continue to do so, with the county and the needle exchange program to create effectively a model exchange program. They're out there. We can study what Santa Clara County, San Francisco County have done in other areas in the community, other areas in the state, to create a program that's both achieves those public health aims, but is accountable to the community, that mitigates the impacts in terms of discarded needles, and creates an accountability and transparency that we can all feel good about and really can understand what they do, and provide in a way that, that doesn't really impact the community in a negative manner. So ultimately, that's going to take some time, and we'll take county action, we believe,
And again, the implication that the current program impacts Santa Cruz in a negative manner is to accept the suppositions of Take Back Santa Cruz, the arguments that they put forward. I'm not necessarily persuaded that's the case, and what I need, of course, to come to a more educated understanding, and perhaps you listeners do too, is to have some discussion with people who are familiar with the Santa Clara and San Francisco approaches that can contrast it meaningfully with what's going on in Santa Cruz at the present time and what's being proposed. And that I'm not entirely clear on. Let's hear some more.
Working towards a model where the exchange program is brought under the county where a nonprofit, where that accountability will exist. And further, we'll study what we can do to create formal policies and practices for pharmacies in terms of providing sharps containers and also taking back needles in their pharmacy locations. Again, the community cleanups, the response has been tremendous by groups like Save Our Shores, the Clean Team, Take Back Santa Cruz, and the Levees, and we want to encourage that to continue in the future. We can't do it by ourselves, and that's been demonstrated. But we really appreciate what you've done, but it's important that there's coordination, ongoing coordination with city staff. It creates frustration both from a staff perspective, but also those in the community when they're trying to do cleanups and they don't understand why the city isn't out there picking up the trash they're picking up. Well, it helps if we work together in the front end. We understand who you guys are, what your needs are, so we can provide the services in a meaningful manner, in a timely manner. But we also get individuals to sign waivers both so they conduct their practices in a safe way and the city isn't held liable for any misconduct.
This, of course, is a sort of a rationalization and justification of an attempt to say, please, you know, don't you guys in the community move to take over cleaning things up because, that would be our job even though we're not really doing it, at least certainly not to the satisfaction of those in the community who are trying to get, who feel this is necessary to be done independently. And it's, to me, it sounds like a lot of verbiage to cover the fact that they're not acknowledging, yeah, we haven't been doing as good a job as we should, and we are taking the following specific steps, increasing the following cleanup schedule, putting the following extra people on cleanup, or contributing to volunteer forces with offering the following special handling materials, waiver forms, whatever. Although I guess Scott Collins, the assistant city manager here at the Public Safety Committee meeting on Tuesday, is saying that they want to have a joint effort. Probably a few joints might not such be a bad idea in this situation.
And looking into the future, the city is going to consider additional cleanups like the ones we did in the summer of 2012, where we removed upwards of 400 tons of garbage and over 400 needles from campsites in and around our open space, and seeing what we can do to increase those cleanups throughout the community so that those encampments don't reemerge.
And here, of course, is where we have the anti-homeless, the dangerous underlying threat, which is to characterize encampments as somehow a public health threat and something that is, it's illegal, it shouldn't be allowed, that's just sort of the bottom line, stops right there. It's illegal. You'll see some people, the argument ends for them at the point. But in fact, if it's illegal, for example, to, breathe without a permit, if it's illegal to sleep without a permit, obviously that's a fundamental violation of human rights, which I think any reasonable person would recognize. But bureaucrats, of course, who are walking along their blinkered, rule-oriented roads don't recognize that. And those who are obsessed with laws and rules as somehow holy writ, regardless of how reasonable or unreasonable they are, also share in that defect. They don't recognize that. I've been pointing this out for years around the criminalization of homeless people. There are no legal campsites in the city of Santa Cruz, period, unless you happen to be on private property with the permission of the owner, hidden away, and you're not getting complaints from some nosy neighbor or some bigot across the way who doesn't like the sight of a camper parked nearby, in which case you'll get zoning complaints. But there's no legal campsite in Santa Cruz. There are some campsites in the state parks, but they're very limited, limited for the number of weeks you can stay there, limited in terms of the cost, limited in terms of the ability to of space. And this is not in any way, it doesn't serve the needs of the several thousand people who are homeless in Santa Cruz and many more who are homeless in the county. I think they counted 3,000 in the county, a significant undercount in my view, in a recent census mentioned either in today's or yesterday's Sentinel. So it's moved from cleaning up real debris to clearing up illegal home campsites. That is to say, destroying people's property and homes such as they are, which is something real. And something profoundly wrong.
Moving on to police staffing, this is ultimately a top priority for the police department as well as the city manager staff. We are a few officers short of a fully complemented police department, but the chief is working tremendously to get us to a point where it's fully staffed by doing such things as a continuous recruitment of transfers and recent graduates of police academies. That way, there isn't the necessary need for training and additional resources. They're ready to go, ready to deploy directly on the street day one. Also working on a new recruit class, which is in the process right now. I believe 50 individuals are going through the oral examination process, and then the next stage is actually going on to the class. And our hope is that we'll have enough individuals that graduate from that and are ready to hire within the year to start the police department. And if necessary, if there are enough recruits that would bring us above the budgeted strength for police officers, the police chief would seek council approval to hire above that amount. So the city's brought together an internal team to look at what we can do in terms of providing additional sanitation services and facilities in the community. We've addressed this before and attempted to do more public restrooms and needle disposal sites. And what's happened in the past is vandalism occurs and staff feel threatened in some cases. So we need to look at that really closely to see if it's something we can do, if we have the ability within our budget to make that happen, but also create an expectation of what that would mean for the community. Because inevitably, if we're going to place restrooms and new restrooms in locations, we want to make sure that's okay with the neighboring areas. The same goes for trash cans. We probably could place more in the beach areas, but we need to understand what that means from a staffing perspective and cost perspective. And ultimately, this is one of the more difficult ones, is what do we do for needle disposal? Do we create kiosks or other management systems? That's something we're going to look at really closely, both internally and with the county. And ultimately, all of these measures really get at is the symptoms of a set of larger problems, and I think everybody in this room understands that. So what we're looking at is creating some long-term vision process to get us to a point where we can get at those underlying problems. So the first recommendation from staff is to create a citizen task force that looks at the problems we face from a broad perspective, from business owners, community members from across the community come together over a 6-month period of time. They meet with the experts in the field, be it the county sheriff, the police department, Parks and Rec, the justice system, what have you. So they fully understand the complement of resources that are being applied to these issues, but also some of the problems that we face and how we can work better together to develop solutions. And ultimately, this task force would create an independent review of what's going on in the community and provide independent recommendations to the city council to move forward on. And in addition to that, the city is working closely with our partners in the county and other cities in the area to develop meaningful solutions, which would complement what the Citizen Task Force is doing. But looking at AB 109, the prison realignment, what we can do with those funds to develop potentially drug treatment programs that, again, get at the underlying problems that both address those with some ancillary things like needle discarding. Finally, we want to partner with our nonprofits. We have over $1 million of funding annually for nonprofits to deal with some of the problems that face those that are on the margins in our community, and ultimately around focus areas like public safety, health, and financial services. So there's an opportunity to fund programs that are proactive in addressing youth violence or youth issues or drug treatment and things of that nature. So that's something we could see happening in the future.
So, more cops to throw at the drug war and the homeless was the first suggestion, although they call it public safety. There's no stats that indicate there's an increase in lack of public safety in terms of crimes reported. Again, there may be, I haven't seen it. Sanitation services in the community, public restrooms, are going to require the okay of neighbors to put in a bathroom. The claim that vandalism is the justification for not having public bathrooms. We've had three public bathrooms open that are visitors' bathrooms, actually better than the dank, grossly, obscenely visible bathroom that you have to actually kind of, display yourself when you walk into the garage that's across from New Leaf Market, where there are these bathrooms. They're planning to do the same kind of open bathrooms at, I guess it's at Walnut Street, or not Walnut Street, the street that's one down from Walnut Street, Locust Street, the Locust Street Garage. But the visitors' bathrooms at Pizza My Heart, at the Tea Room that's right down the road from New Leaf Market, down that side street, Lincoln, and the bookshop Santa Cruz. There hasn't been a lot of talk about major vandalism in these bathrooms, and they're always open to the public while these restaurants are open. You don't have to be a customer to go into those places, and I commend the city for doing it. When I was working in Santa Barbara 20 years ago, we did it there. There was pressure on the city council to do it, and they did. They opened up 4 public bathrooms. But you need more public bathrooms. You need bathrooms that are open all night, and we don't have those in Santa Cruz. And they're an immediate need. They're not something you want to have long discussions about and citizen task forces on. This is complete crap in more senses than one. Budget cops. Cut back the budget for cops, not for bathrooms. You need the bathrooms all the time. To have, 4 squad cars responding to a sit crime downtown, which is what is often a typical scene when officers Warren and Winston are on the job and they encounter any kind of attitude, response, like, why are you taking away my constitutional rights? Suddenly you've got cops galore, because it's a major crisis, when the people, when the authority of these folks is challenged. Why would you have to spend time worrying about the cost of trash cans? That seems to be what they're also saying. Needle disposal issues, I'm not familiar with all the technical details, but other cities presumably have such programs. A citizen task force, well, that's a way of avoiding doing something, is to throw it into a task force. And the task force will be composed of business owners and community members, but not drug users, and not homeless people, and not homeless advocates. Interesting. This is more delay in dealing with essential issues about putting in public sanitation facilities and addressing trash pickups and cleanups. Some of the phraseology, working closely, meaningful solutions. And then, of course, this whole fantasy of drug treatment programs. Given the criminalization of drugs, you have a huge racket of people forced into a lot of programs, NA and AA and drug treatment programs, which maybe in some cases work. But the reality is more and more people have to deal with the problem because it's treated as a crime rather than as a medical condition. The kind of money that goes into the jails and the police force, which could go into real programs for addressing these issues, of course, is not. And people say, well, it's a national issue. We want these people out of our neighborhood. Get rid of the meth labs now and the cranksters now. And I appreciate that. But the fact is, unless you are also looking at the real long term, and nothing is mentioned in this report about those issues, you're just moving it around. That's all you're doing. So, you're tuned to Free Radio, in case you just tuned in. I'm Robert Norris, and I'm expounding in detail about the Public Safety Committee meeting of Tuesday, which essentially was the city's attempt to manage outrage by a number of newly formed groups. The Clean Team was one, and Take Back Santa Cruz is newly formed. It's been around, I think, for 4 years now. Pushing a rather nasty agenda in some respects, but in other respects with a number of legitimate concerns. And instead of addressing these issues immediately and saying, yeah, we're going to put out twice as many trash cans, or we're going to double our pickups, and, you know, we're building public restrooms immediately, that, of course, is we're going to go study the issue and kind of have some consultants. And we'll have citizen groups. We'll look over the situation. And, of course, we will issue more money for police officers because they're a privileged group in our community. Anyway, there's much more of this. I'm now going to have a little, a bit of a breather from this with another Andy DeFranco musical selection. And hopefully, maybe some of your thoughts, those of you who've been listening and have access to a phone and want to call in, please do. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I don't want to put you all to sleep with my melodious voice, so let's have a few other voices if you wish.
Follow you into the next life.
And that was another from Annie DeFranco, and it was called Hearse, H-E-A-R-S-E. And I found it pretty easy to understand, so, hey, those lyrics don't need any separate reading or anything of that sort. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. FreakRadio.org is the website to go to if you want to catch the stream, where you can click on the red dot on top of the transmitter graphic there on the Freak Radio website. If you want to find out more about Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, you can go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. Come to a Huff meeting on Wednesday. Get on the Huff email list by clicking on the appropriate place on the Huff website, and we'll shoot out to you the latest stuff we got. Or listen to the show, which often has a lot of that kind of material on it. Call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-3772. Tomorrow at 8:15, I want to remind people that Cameron Laurendeau, the last of the Santa Cruz 11 to be rearraigned on phony trespass and conspiracy to commit vandalism charges based upon a very strange theory that doesn't involve any evidence that he was doing any vandalism or that he actively assisted in any vandalism. But this is a whole long ordeal that's been going on for the Santa Cruz 11, seven of whom have already had all charges dismissed. I'm one of those. But four of whom are still facing this continuing pogrom by D.A. Bob Lee and his incompetent and, I would have to say, somewhat either blind or malicious Lieutenant Rebecca Young. And that's going to be in Department 6 tomorrow, Friday, February 1st at 8:15. I'll be there in solidarity with Cameron Laurendeau and his attorney Alexis Briggs from the Pier 5 legal firm, which is up in San Francisco. Alexis has put in some of the best motions challenging the facts, challenging the entire prosecution, trying to get these charges dismissed months and months ago, by pointing out that when he was asked to leave, Cameron Laurendeau left, and there was no evidence that he came back. And that's what the whole basis of this thing is, that there is a trespass charge which people, a trespass that people violated, the law they violated, therefore any vandalism that happened in the building, whether they did it, knew about it, planned it, had anything to do with it or not, is their responsibility because they were violating the law in that building, another law, a much more minor law. Felony vandalism can put you in prison for 3 years. Trespass can put you in jail for 1 year. And that theory means that, if Cameron Laurendeau left when he was told to go, there's no trespass, because the nature of the trespass statute that he's charged with is you don't go when you're directed to go. But that wasn't good enough for Judge Burdick, who found him, there was enough evidence, he claimed that the fact that there was a photo apparently presented at the last minute by the prosecution. Again, another example of they're not providing discovery to the defense, of someone who they claim was Laurendeau on top of a building, on top of the bank building, or a building that they claimed was the bank building, a photo that was not actually authenticated by any particular journalist, but was just presented. So that's the evidence on which Cameron Laurendeau is now going to have to face a felony trial. He's been already going through this process for now a year now, and he's going into his second year along with three others. Franklin Alcantara Angel and Gabriella Ripley Phipps and Brent Adams, all of whom are peaceful activists who may have been supporters of the takeover of the vacant building, the peaceful occupation of the bankster Wells Fargo, which continues its depredations with no opposition from the DA's office or the police department or the city fathers or the state legislators. Well, there's some minor foreclosure protections that have been passed in the last year that are very limited They enable you to go sue Wells Fargo, so you can put your attorneys against them and see who comes out on top. That's tomorrow at 8:15. I'll be down there. I also had an interesting case in court today where I went and actually did a very productive morning, not because anything that happened in court was productive. It was kind of the opposite. Two individuals, Alex and Jessica, who were essentially, by their account, assaulted by Officer Azua and other officers on the pretext that Jessica did not get off her bicycle quickly enough on the sidewalk. She is being massively charged. Well, there's, I don't know, what, 5, 6, 7 police reports. Alex pled today in order to get out of this labyrinth, and we're going to hear interviews with him probably on Sunday. But before that, and what I'm going to turn to now, is the aftermath of the Food Not Bombs Saturday community solidarity, because a lot of folks came together and denounced what was going on with the postal officials and the police when they shut down Food Not Bombs at the postal federal building, where they were serving free food in a non-obstructive and productive way. They'd had no complaints about them that anybody was willing to bring forward in any kind of clear way, just sort of, well, we've had complaints, as though that should resolve it. You know, we have complaints about you holding up your signs, you know, in front of the courthouse, therefore you can't do it. And that's, you would think, well, wait a minute, isn't there a constitution around here somewhere? And it's hard to find these days, and it's got to be around here somewhere, I know that. Anyway, here's some more interviews from that afternoon. I will be there Saturday myself at 4 o'clock and encourage folks to come on down, be supportive of Food Not Bombs. They need people to cook and serve. They aren't violating the law. They are asserting their constitutional rights, although they've backed down from asserting them on the steps of the courthouse under threat of prosecution by the federal authorities, backed up by... I was going to use the phrase uniformed thugs from the police department, Officer Venegas and Officer David Forbus. They didn't beat anybody up. They didn't pull their weapons out. So, you know, maybe it's not fair for me to call them thugs. But the way I was treated as a member of the media trying to determine, observe what was going on and record the conversations between the officers and other members of the public, to wit, Steve Plaich. I continually threatened by them, and it was an example of thuggery, because police officers are supposed to be there to uphold the Constitution, not to shred it up and, you know, refuse to apply it to people that they don't like. Anyway, let's hear some of that. We actually left this last Sunday. We were listening to a report, or I was listening to a report, maybe you were too if you were listening on Sunday, from Freedom Bridges, who is up in San Francisco doing support for a community garden and recycling center that was recently bulldozed by the San Francisco authorities.
Freedom, you, last I heard you were, either locked up, trespassed, or wandering around up north with some kind of questionable group. Something to do about recycling in the Haight and the community gardens, and what's that all about?
Yeah, I was actually up in San Francisco, and there's a community recycling center, the Haight-Ashbury Neighborhood Council, and that has been there for 40 years in Golden Gate Park, specifically Kezar Gardens area next to Kezar Stadium. And there was also a community garden there where people were eating for free, and people were exchanging recyclables for money. And this was actually...
You don't do, right? You don't use money, correct? Or have you, should we say, softened your position?
Hey,
Dan.
Hi.
You were saying, Freedom?
Yeah, there's a... Okay, so there was a recycling center and a garden in the same location, and the city came in to demolish it essentially for class warfare, because people were surviving and also sustaining the planet, living healthily and creating a healthy environment around them as well. And that is kind of, I guess,
that's what they were doing. What happened recently, though? What was the? I believe they came and there was some resistance to this attempt to demolish the area, right?
Yes. There were quite a few people who were against this, and quite a few people who were just uninformed in general. And that really shocked me, that majority of the people in the neighborhood didn't even know what was happening. So I feel like there was definitely some illegal activity on the city's behalf, because I feel like there was not any protocol met or any accountability naturally. Kind of like this Warrior Stadium, it just kind of appeared one day, just like the garden disappeared one day. And it was really hard to see, and the day that the bulldozer came in to demolish the garden, I got arrested in attempts to not let that happen.
What did they charge you with?
I have something similar to a jaywalking ticket and resisting arrest.
How many others were arrested?
With me that day, there was one other person arrested. The day prior, there was three individuals arrested. One who was in the garden transplanting the plants, and then the others, two other people were inside of the greenhouse trying to keep the greenhouse that has been built by these space transformers, the folks who have been most recently putting in a lot of effort and work into maintaining that community space and trying to hold on to it. So right now, Cusard Gardens is completely demolished and the concrete is being torn out.
And I know some neighborhood organizations like HANC, Haight-Ashbury Neighborhood Council, thank you, were also trying to stand up to this. How many people actually showed to suggest that they were opposed to this bulldozing?
Through the couple weeks I was there prior to the demolition, we had, I'd say, around at least 100 people who were, like, physically really working in the space, and a very large number of express supporters as well.
And what's your situation now? Are you waiting for a court date, or have they even been filed? Police have risk issued citations, and charges may well disappear before court.
Well, all other charges have been dropped so far, except for, well, we're not sure if I have any charges yet. I was not found in the system the day that my friends had court, that I went to court with them for, and we're unsure. On my ticket it says around 2:20 or 2:22, so I'll be having to...
More in February when...
Yeah, the end of February. Also, I got a ticket for camping, which...
Camping in San Francisco?
Mm-hmm, yeah, in San Francisco.
Is it illegal to shelter yourself in San Francisco?
Yeah, it's actually illegal to sit in a sleeping bag in San Francisco.
So why don't you use the wonderful Commodious Shelter Services of San Francisco? Smiles grimly at me.
I prefer nature. You know, I'm a firm believer that we have natural rights, that we are natural animals and beings, you know, and I think that the healthiest thing for us is to recognize that and try to sustain a healthy lifestyle for the planet, for ourselves, our community, our relationships, our health, and so on.
With Golden Gate Park or somewhere, and were you accosted with other people sleeping or camping?
Yes, I mean, I wasn't actually sleeping or camping, but I was accosted with other folks, yes.
And is that a frequent occurrence, or do you usually just an unlucky night for you?
It was actually a morning, and it wasn't a frequent occurrence there. However, I've not been as blatant other days.
You're just lying around or sitting around in your sleeping bag waiting for the police?
I was just sitting in a sleeping bag, not necessarily doing anything other than that.
And here you are again in Santa Cruz, probably bound and determined to violate our laws against this kind of criminal conduct.
I don't have any goals necessarily to violate laws. I do have goals to uphold truths that I find to be very important, and that we need to do, even though they may violate laws that were unconsensually forced on us and even violently done so. So I think that it's important to stand up against that, even if there's repression or oppression.
Anything coming up in the next week or two you want to advise people of that they should be aware of?
On February 1st through the 3rd up in Mendocino, there is a gathering for council for folks to scout out areas to camp and for the Rainbow Gathering, which is coming up in May. And there will be some discussions held there, as well as meditation, healing ceremonies, and a lot of conversation and different people who are really good to network with as well.
How can people get more information about this?
It's groundhogday.blogspot.org, I believe.
Groundhogday.blogspot.org.
I think it's Groundhog Day Blogspot.
With no dot.
Dot Blogspot.
I don't know. I haven't been there.
I'm not 1,000% sure. It might be Dot Blogspot, or it might just be Groundhog Day Blogspot.
Try both Groundhog Day Blogspot and Groundhog Day Dot Blogspot.org.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've been talking with the ever enthusiastic
Frida.
Thank you, Frida.
Thank you.
Well, Angel, you said that there's been some other concerns you've had about closed distributors facing police interrogation.
Well, I just say I met a new group today, and, you know, I don't even remember their title, or if they even have a title, but what they're doing is they're collecting clothes, clean clothes, or cleaning them, whatever. You know, nice stuff. I even saw what they have, and they're gathering together, and they're grouping in locations and, you know, just handing them out to people. People that are in need of, you know, jackets or blankets.
Where was this?
Today's location was it was right there off of Ocean, off of Lower Ocean Street. And
what did you hear? What did you see that concerned you?
I saw their sign. There's a sign out there that said, you know, free stuff. So I went over there, took a look, see what they got. And, I was kind of impressed. You know, they had some nice stuff for people there. You know, I saw a couple of big jackets that had, you know, down in it. And I was like, wow, somebody will really appreciate this. Who has to be out here, you know, being subjective.
How many people were involved?
A handful.
And what did you hear that concerned you?
Well, they said that they've been harassed also by the cops, you know.
In what form? Did they get specific?
I think one of the ordinances downtown is like the hour rule. But
along every hour.
Yeah, but I think they were referring to a different location. I don't remember correctly, but I think that that's what they were saying. But, you know, nonetheless, they're still getting.
Now, you're one of the notorious Santa Cruz 11 who's still twisting in the wind there.
Yeah.
Your next court date is, I guess, Cameron Larundo goes to court on February 1st, where we'll be, I'll be supporting him there. Any thoughts about the last hearing, and how are you feeling?
Well, I'm just... My thoughts on the next hearing is just, you know, knowing that I didn't do any of the allegations that I've been accused of, I feel like I'm fighting a corrupt system, because I know in my heart and I already know that there's no evidence, so I'm not worried about that. But it's like they're just pushing, even though the case already got dismissed once.
Thrice.
You know, it's ridiculous, and it's been draining, actually, physically, emotionally. I want to leave Santa Cruz for a while, you know, and get away, and I can't even do that because I'm stuck here now having to deal with this. And
I hear what you're saying. We've been talking with
me.
Thank you, me. So again, we're saying goodbye to the man of music,
Gary Adler,
and his pooch,
Harley Diddleston.
And Harley is, of course, a very fashionable poodie. Hi, Harley.
He's my cousin's dog. I'm his uncle.
You're the uncle.
Essentially, yeah.
You're not a monkey's uncle. You're a doggy's uncle.
A dog's uncle. People's uncle.
And you're a man who you 20 years ago you were doing with Cambridge Food.
Yeah.
And this is a musician, Gary. I think it's Adler. Who was playing guitar throughout the police postal inspector harassment of Food Not Bombs last Saturday with his little pooch nearby.
Yeah, back in the mid-90s, my band, Migrant Pickers, we used to play at meals all the time in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Harvard Square.
As you were saying before.
That whole area.
How do people hear your music? Do they go online? Do you have
If you go to Gary Adler Guitar on Facebook.
G-A-D-L-E-R?
Yep. Gary Adler Guitar Facebook. It's easy to find. That's where I disseminate information there. And I'm playing. I do a series of concerts in San Francisco. I showcase acoustic music at 50 Mason Social Hall. Social House.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, people will perhaps check you out, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, and good luck to Food Not Bonds. Great cause.
Thank you, man. What's your name, musician man?
My name's Sean Daw.
And Sean, you have looks like a homemade flute.
It's a shakuhachi, and I got it in Portland.
And have you been, do you want to give us a sample of your art here?
Sure.
Alrighty. Thank you. So, did you witness much of the activity today?
No, I did not. I showed up right after the activity occurred.
Avoided all the ruckus, so to speak.
Precisely.
Or perhaps just missed the ruckus.
Precisely.
A long time Santa Cruz? You say you came from out of town.
I've been in Santa Cruz on and off for about 2 years.
Any impressions you want to pass on? Any feelings about the day that you, the gathering today? Any clothes in the police department you wish to memorialize?
I don't appreciate the police department trying to attack what I feel is to attack public services that aren't. I would appreciate it if they weren't as martial as they have been in the past.
Thank you, and we have been talking with
Sean Daw.
Thanks, Sean. Sean Daw.
Correct.
That man about the law. Well, I won't give it a name. Your whole approach to this whole feeding stuff has been kind of fleet-footed approach, would you say, sir?
I just don't see any reason to get busted if you don't have to. They moved, 20 feet down to the sidewalk. We're still at the same spot, serving people, doing what they came here to do.
It was God's work.
Right. This is more of an anarchist operation than a Christian operation.
Anarchists are religious anarchists.
Well, I think
Tolstoy, a well-known religious...
No, I think most of them I've met have been atheists or Buddhists at best. I prefer doing the guerrilla way. I mean, we've had several people arrested over the past 2 or 3 years, and nothing's come of it, really. It doesn't do us any good to be in jail.
So you're taking a pragmatic approach.
I do believe in a pragmatic approach, but remember, they are being code compliant. They are still code defiant, and they're cop defiant because they are remaining and feeding people here. If they're asked to move again, they can move across the street. There's a couple places they can move, and then they could return. As far as the steps here, I don't know what the legal law is. As you said, the postmaster was trying to say it's trespass, federal trespass, and yet he did not cite any code.
602, the state code.
Oh, that's state code. Okay, you were asked to leave. We left, That doesn't mean you can't come back later. There's nothing in the code that says anything about whether you return or not, so I don't know.
Perhaps an injunction would be the next step to deal with your kind.
They might go for an injunction, but the trouble is, it's not really blocking anything. This is a Saturday. It's not that busy. It's on one side of the post office. Well, the doors are locked, so it doesn't impede the public. There is no government interest in being infringed other than the personal prerogative of some bureaucrats.
That's a very mean way to describe our post office.
An accurate way to describe it. Why do they care if somebody is here getting food,
You actually do a show on Tuesday nights on Free Radio.
Sometimes, and in the afternoon, too.
Who will you be doing, and you're a questionable cohort here, something on this subject on Tuesday?
Probably not. I might just mention it briefly.
Or will you be wandering over to the Public Safety Committee meeting to observe the stringing up of the homeless people?
I don't know. I'd like to do more of a cop watch thing for Free Radio, do live cop watches in Free Radio. I want to get that going on Tuesday.
You could have a phone, and then your person in the studio could We're right on the heels of Officer.
Plus we have another DJ coming on later at 10, Lurch, who's also doing Cop Watch, is trying to prevail, and he wants to come in a little earlier, so we may move a can show that's in between our shows so that we can kind of combine the shows more and maybe do a.
Interesting. That's on Tuesday.
It's already been approved, actually, for free radio. People can call in and interrupt any show at any time if there's a live DJ there and may do a Cop Rock report. So we have.
You also are a part of that program.
Yes, I am.
And so we have a number of shows which are actually doing. The subject matter is downtown police concerns. How people are being treated. That's, your show is on Thursday. It's what, from 6 to 9?
You're thinking Thursday is your show.
Tuesday from 6 to 9.
We've covered local issues sometimes. We do
and
a bunch
also
stuff.
Lurch is from 10 to...
10 to 12, but we're going to try and get him out a little earlier, maybe.
And I guess Brent Adams has a show, The Burning Flag.
We don't mention people's full names on free radio.
Brent, what's his name, has a show.
We could say Robert Norris, because that isn't a true name.
Robert Norris, the top called Robert Norris Khan.
Yeah. It is a rule, but you're not supposed to mention
fuck the rules about you. Somebody once said.
Everybody knows who the DJ
when is Brent's show, do you know?
I have already told you when Brent's show. Let me just put it that way.
You know, I think it's more than that. I think it's just a way for the government to control people, and they're afraid of people having the idea of helping each other, feeding each other, because then they would, you know, start to lose control of their systematic oppression, and their revenue. That's all they care about. You know, there's revenue off people's death, it's slow death is what they're carrying out, and I think that's really what it is. You know, it's,
speaking as a hungry person.
Actually, no, I ate a little while ago. I had a nice little cheesesteak, but
very nice. I may have to go do that myself.
Yeah, but, you know, there are some times where I'm like, my stomach is growling, and.
Well, people, I think the government often does the opposite. It tries to feed people in order to shut them up because they don't want food riots happening. In fact, that's what I think was happening in Egypt, that they were, you know, they stopped cooperating with the International Monetary Fund last month so they could pass the elections and feed people, and now who knows what they're going to do now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so feeding people, at least to the extent that they don't start breaking into the food shops, is, you know, an element of a stable government.
Bread and circuses.
Bread and, of course, you supply the bread, we'll supply the circuses. So,
unfortunately, we're the circus.
Indeed. And we're not even getting paid for it.
Well,
we're
the trials are anyway.
We are performers.
I think I'm speaking for a lot of people. You know, people are getting fed up with this BS and...
fed up, no pun intended.
You know, no pun intended, but, you know, people are getting tired of the way that, you know, there's really no quality of life here in the United States anymore for a lot of people, and...
You might take over a building, a bank at some point, do you think?
Well, you know, I think...
That's involved.
And I think that, you know, if things keep going the way that they are, that... people are going to stand up eventually and say, hey, we've had enough, and you know, who knows where it's going to go from there.
Or as I once said, can you hear the people singing the song of angry men?
Yeah.
Or women, is the case.
I'm unreasonably disturbed.
Well, it's around 1:30 on Sunday, the 28th of January. There's a hoedown down here on Pacific Avenue. Looks like a crowd. People are lining the sidewalk. Taking photos and dancing. I say dancing. In the street. Dancing in the street. We've got lots of women bold enough to dance and one man with a with some pink panties on and bare chested and dancing. We're talking four guys with guitar, bass, violin, and some other instrument over there. I'm not sure what it is. And the people are gathering around, having a good time. And we're talking eight people dancing. Yow! Wow. Report from Raven on the streets.
Actually, he's only going to come and make a report himself. But
you got a report as you were vending street spirits?
Yes. Yeah, a gentleman said he got profiled as being homeless the other night while he was listening to some live music right over here.
In front of New Leaf?
Yeah. And he was leaning against a wall just listening to music, and some other people had all their stuff lined up along the wall also. And the cop stopped and said, is all this your stuff? And he said, no. And he's like, really? None of this is yours? He's, no. This guy has a home. You know, he's got kids and whatever. Then he got told that he couldn't lean against the wall that way.
No, there's no anti-leaning law yet, as far as I know.
Yeah, well.
There is an anti-sitting law.
Yeah, well.
An anti-spitting law.
Yeah, he wasn't sitting or spitting. He was listening to music, kind of leaning against a fence or a wall or something.
This, of course, is by his report.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You were not an eyewitness.
No, I was not. And he said he'd come and talk to somebody about it because he was thinking about filing a complaint.
He didn't say which police officer graced him with this encounter?
He didn't tell me, but I think he does know. And I gave him your card so that he could come to the Huff meeting.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Anything else you wish to report before I leave you here?
No. I'm kind of enjoying, educating people out here on the street about what street spirit is, and, yeah, just having some fun.
No hassle selling street spirit.
No, not so far. Let's keep moving, because my feet hurt.
All right. Well, here's a man I think who wants to say something.
And that was Raven, who regularly sells street spirit on the streets. You can also find street spirit in the main public library, and you can also get it from me, the guy with all the bumper stickers on his car, or at least I'm one of the bumper-stickered car drivers. There is a new issue of Street Spirit coming out soon, because tomorrow is February 1st. It's a monthly publication. Homeless and poor people and people facing homelessness can sell it and make all the profit that they can off of it. You can usually get a dollar an issue. Sometimes it's easier to sell than other times, and Raven has been selling it on the streets of Santa Cruz for almost a month now. You can also get it if you come to the Occupy Santa Cruz meetings that happen every Sunday. That's at 2 o'clock at the post office. I'll be at the Food Not Bombs feeding at the post office on Saturday at 4 o'clock, so you can pick it up there if you're interested. Check it out, and it's also online if you want to look at Street Spirit and you haven't, can't find a vendor. But it really helps homeless people to get that small amount of change. It can mean coming out of the cold and being able to sit and nurse a cup of coffee for an hour or an hour and a half in the Santa Cruz diner before they throw you out. So think about that. That's about it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. On Sunday, I'm going to be returning with more on the Public Safety Committee, more presumably from the Food Not Bombs encounters at the post office on Saturday. Some additional information about the White versus City of Sparks decision in Reno, which allows artists to sell, not just give away for donation, but sell their artwork without the requirement that they get a permit. So this is something that I think needs to be more broadly publicized in Santa Cruz. There's also some talk of, not just my talk, I'm hearing apparently it's talk from other people, of forming a street performers guild or street artists get-together union kind of activity. Coming up next on Free Radio, it's going to be From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis with a special host who's going to be doing it, who will take over momentarily. As a matter of fact, you can grab Mike while I've got a few more things I have to do here, but I'll almost be gone. You might want to introduce the show, and thank you for being with me in this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Call me off air if you see police shit going down. Try again, see if that works. But one of them should work. And 423-4833 is the number to call. And thanks for listening.
Hi. I'm kind of uncomfortable in this position here while Robespierre is closing up shop. I am going to be your guest host for the evening. My name is Ren. You may know me from another show. that I do every Monday at 3 in the afternoon. Goes for a couple of hours. It's called Mideast Madness. And I still consider myself to be largely new at this kind of thing here. Here. Oh, I know what I can do. Now, this might sound strange. Try not to be scared.
Tell me when.
Go. Has to read it first anyway.
For English Voice Guide.
Bitte stellen Sie die Laufnummer 3 für die deutschen Anweisungen ein.
Veuillez sélectionner la piste numéro 4 pour les instructions en français.
Por favor, pase el track 5 para la voz en español.
Track 6 に進めて、日本語の説明に入ります。
请跳到第七音轨听取中文说明。
Thank you for selecting this CD cleaning disc to clean your CD player. You can enjoy music while cleaning your CD player at the same time. When you hear the high tone beat sound, please forward the cleaning CD to track 9.
Wir bedanken uns herzlich dafür, dass Sie diese Reinigungsdiskette für Ihren CD-Spieler gewählt haben.
There you go. Sorry. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 on the FM dial. We're also streaming live at www.freakradio.org anytime. And the changing of the guard is occurring right now. You can hear the music, the pompous circumstance going on. Thanks very much, Robert.
Hey, good luck. Have a good show.
I hope so. Don't forget to listen then.
Had 3 out of 4 mics on for a moment there. Kind of precarious. You see, Robert Norse is still downloading the show that he just did for a couple of hours, and it's only 20, you know, 0.25% done. I mean, 0.25% done. And for one thing, we're waiting for that to go on. I mean, there's no reason I can't start the show. Yes, you heard correctly. Uncle Dennis is not going to be with us tonight, but he guarantees he'll be back February the 7th, next week. He's out on a cross-country ski hut. And if anybody can tell me what a hut is in that context, please call me at area code 831-427-3772. Or 469-3119. You may call me for any reason. Doesn't necessarily have to be within the context of what I happen to be doing tonight. I'm subbing tonight, but as I indicated a couple of minutes ago, my name is Ren Tawil. Ren, in case you're really wondering, is diminutive of Lawrence, L-A-W-R-E-N-C-A-C-E, but when I say Ren, I don't say it with the W, I say it just R-E-N, so that's who Ren Tawil is. Okay. So, Dennis, I hope you're not freezing your ass off out there. It's pretty hard not to. I mean, you know, I haven't exactly done a lot of winter camping myself, but I've frozen my ass off doing some downhill skiing in my day. I also broke my leg when I was 17 doing exactly that. Let me see, that was at Bear Valley, they used to call it. I don't know if it has the same name anymore. And if Uncle Dennis has broken his leg, he's probably warming up with some hot cocoa and little marshmallows in the lodge. And listening right now. Here's to you, Uncle Dennis. Oh, this is so exciting. I haven't done anything like this in my life. Get to play the music I want to. But I expect to stay more or less within the confines of from the cream to the dregs, usual format. See, I really have to wait for this download to complete before I chime in because I want to record from the beginning of the first real music that I do. As long as that's what's going on, I shall clean the other tray. See what's going on here. It's looking. Track number one, do it. Do it. Cleaning the disc. This is a disc cleaning CD. And for some reason we can't hear it. Oh. I forgot that the two sliders for the CD player. Still nothing. Bear with me, folks. I know I'm not all that exciting at the moment, as though I ever am, but I'll bet. No, I opened the other CD tray and still nothing. So, how's the weather where you folks are, huh? I'll take it for granted that cleaned it. And as I was saying earlier, I usually do a show called Mideast Madness. God, I hope I didn't say Midnight Madness. My tongue just wants to slip right into that titular lingual slip-up. Mideast Madness. I am the Palestinian American you may have heard of, most likely not. And that's what that show every Monday at 3 p.m. is about. My viewpoint of the big conflict with a capital C going on between Israelis and Palestinians and other Arabs. So, I don't mind letting you know who I am here and now. I want to put this in Robespierre's. Okay, we are done downloading the program you have just heard with Robert Norse. I suppose I could just keep it in my file for the time being. I'll probably end up doing just that. Okay, it's going to be in the Mideast Madness folder after all. You have to give it a title. Uh, maybe I shouldn't have deleted that. No, well, I said,